Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Murder Mile, a true crime podcast, an audio-guided walk featuring many of London's untold, unsolved, and long-forgotten murders, all set within and beyond the West End. Today's episode is a simple story about two like-minded ladies who found love, a nice flat, and a happy home life together, having adopted many cats. Nora and Barbara were each other's forever lovers. But true love doesn't always last, and when the romance died, it drove one lady to leave and her lover to kill. Murder Mile is researched using the original police files. It contains moments of satire, shock, and grisly details. And as a dramatization of the real events, it may also feature loud and realistic sounds, so that no matter where you listen to this podcast, you'll feel like you're actually there. My name is Michael. I am your tour guide. And this is Murder Mile. Episode 106. The Last Love of the Chiswick Cat Ladies. Today, I'm standing in Linden Gardens in Chiswick, W4. A place we've only tenuously been to before, as we're one street south of where Kate Beagley picked up Carl Taylor for their first and last date. A quick cycle east of the arrest of Edward Tickle for the bungled abortion of Helen Mary Pickwode. And we're just a few stops from the 6-day killing spree of Britain's very own Bonnie and Clyde. Coming soon to Murder Mile. Chiswick High Road is deeply pretentious and desperate to cling on to its posh aspirations of yesteryear. It's the kind of place where you'll find avocados, hummus, sold-out copies of Horse and Hound, and a broken wicker chair dumped in a skip, only to be sold 6 seconds later to a pipe-smoking, tweed-wearing numpty in red trousers for 600 quid. Here, hiring a cleaner is still seen as high status. They still say nanny instead of babysitter. They don't go on holiday. They holiday. Big difference. And it's illegal to order a single thing off the menu unless you insist that the chef makes a tiny pointless change just for you.
Less garlic.
No wheat.
Use fair trade spoons.
Oh yes, baby Tarquin absolutely loves black truffle couscous.
Linden Gardens is a peaceful little side street just off the Chiswick High Road and one road from the Chiswick Police Station. It's quiet, neat, safe and pleasant, with a line of trees on both sides, a line of cars, usually Audis, and several cats sunning themselves on the pavement, pretending to be the best pal of every crazy but easily duped and desperately lonely lady who smells of fish. Comprising of 3- and 4-storey terraces, with brown brick, cream plasterwork, white windowsills, and black iron gates. Some houses are wholly owned, and others are a mix of rented flats. But none of them have a front garden, just a set of stone steps leading down to a small, self-contained basement flat below. Almost 50 years ago, the basement flat of 15 Linden Gardens was the rented home of Nora Tenconi, her lover Barbara Doyle, and their 8 cats. This was their love nest, and the place they planned to grow old together. But their happiness was not to last. So as the two lovers split, this peaceful little street was shattered by tears, cries, and screams, as a very fractious relationship came to a tragic end. As it was here, on Friday the 27th of August 1971, in the basement flat of 15 Linden Gardens, being at a loss at her lover's rejection, that Nora took several desperate steps, which ended in death. Nora Tenconi was born Nora O'Donnell on the 7th of September 1934 in the rural town of Charlesville in County Cork, Ireland. As the seventh of 8 siblings in a traditionally large Irish Catholic family, Nora struggled for any shred of attention. But with those moments of affection being few and far between, this didn't make her a little monster. It actually made her a better person. Nora always loved a kiss and a cuddle. The warm, reassuring feeling of another person's embrace she would always cherish. And as much as her strict, God-fearing mother seemed to love no other than the Lord, being blessed with a big heart and a smothering hug, it was her father who she adored. Being small, thin, pale, and painfully quiet, Nora became a very thoughtful person. She was emotional, but never destructive, placid and always polite. Raised to be a good Catholic, Nora didn't steal, swear, and she renounced the temptations of the devil, whether theft, adultery, lustful impulses, homosexual acts, suicide, self-destruction, and murder, which she feared, but was deeply confused by, as being just a child, she was unlikely to commit or even understand. And yet, gripped by an innate sense of guilt over these vile things she had never done, her faith would be sorely tested. As a blameless child, bullied into confessing the sins she was raised to renounce, being forced to invent sins to confess, as lies were a sin, confession had made her a sinner. Nora was a good person, with a deep love of people, animals, and especially cats. But childhood was a confusing time, especially for a bright growing girl trying to work out who she was. For fear of being led astray by the temptations of the flesh, Nora's mother banned her from going to dances or having a boyfriend. So throughout her early life, any romance was in secret. And yet again, her faith had forced her to sin. Educated at the Charlesville Secondary School, a Catholic school where the sexes split, it was here that Nora enjoyed her first teenage crushes, fondles, and kisses. But she didn't fancy the boys. It was the girls who fueled her passions. In 1948, age 14, Nora left school, and being naturally very caring, she started work as a nanny. But struggling with the conflicts of her lustful feelings towards women, an inbuilt disgust of homosexuality, and a strong traditional desire to marry a man, have children, and to make a home, Nora didn't know who she was or what she was meant to be. Feeling overwhelmed by the pressure to conform, regardless of her own happiness, in 1952, age 17, alongside her older sister Helen, Nora moved to London. Only her new life in London would be full of angst, confusion, self-loathing, and conflict. Having quit as a nanny, Norva worked a variety of jobs, as a cashier in a butcher's shop on Chiswick High Road, an orderly at St. Stephen's Hospital in Fulham, and an usher at the Gaumont Cinema in Camden. And although she was described as loyal, bright and efficient, she was also prone to bouts of depression. In late 1954, age 20, following her Irish Catholic instincts and driven by a desire to finally be happy, Nora met and fell in love with a 33-year-old Italian convict called René Clive Tenconi. A bad man with a bad past and a furious temper whose criminal ways would lead her astray. In May 1955, being found guilty of breaking into a branch of W.H. Smith's to steal a rack of raincoats, hats and shirts worth £100, as a first-time offender, Nora was charged with larceny, given a 2-year probation order, and bailed. But being a prolific thief, who was arrested for stealing copper cables from a GPO store in Harleston, René was sentenced to 6 months in prison. At this point, Nora could have run, as René was a violent, abusive brute who regularly beat her black and blue. But she didn't, as the pull of love and marriage was too great. Instead, shortly after his release from prison, Nora O'Donnell married René Tenconi. She got pregnant, and being so violently assaulted by him that she miscarried. Shortly afterwards they separated, but owing to their faith, they never divorced. It seemed as if Nora Tenconi was doomed to live an unhappy life, where love would elude her. Her life was a confusing mess. She had broken so many sins, theft, lust, adultery, and homosexuality. And yet, she wasn't bad. She was just a big-hearted woman who craved love, and the simple things that romance brings, like kisses, cuddles, love letters, romantic meals, and holding hands. By the age of 30, she had lost all hope of ever finding love. And then, she met Barbara. Barbara Judith Doyle, known to her friends as Judy, was born on the 22nd of September 1936 in the New Zealand city of Wellington, having come to Britain in 1962, just 1 year before she met Nora. As a loving couple, Nora and Barbara were similar in so many ways. Both had parents living overseas. Both had fled difficult relationships. Both were raised Catholic, but struggled with their faith's persecution of their chosen romantic choices. And they both loved music, books, and cats. Separately, their differences complemented each other. Whereas Barbara was a raven-haired fan of fashion who would confidently strut down the Chiswick High Road in a pair of high heels, a wide-brimmed hat, and an outfit in shocking pink, Nora dressed more conservatively in a brown trouser suit, soft pumps, and being a creature of comfort, she loved nothing more than lounging on the sofa, wearing her favourite, slightly worn, red bathrobe. In contrast, Barbara was more dominant, outgoing and impulsive. But her boundless energy also drove Nora to become more confident in herself. And although she would still be plagued with bouts of self-doubt and depression, this period in her life had stability and progression. Having been promoted to cashier at the Gaumont Cinema in Waltham Green, manageress of a dry cleaners on Portobello Road, and later as a cashier at Hedges Butchers in Chiswick, with a combined wage of £35, Nora and Barbara moved in together, and to everyone who knew them, they were very much in love. As a gay couple, the only real conflict they encountered was Nora's own inner turmoil. As although Barbara had been a lesbian since her teens, still struggling with her faith, family, and traditional urges. Nora was gripped with a tremendous guilt. As still fancying men, she felt that she didn't feel completely gay. And yet, as a faithful, loving, and caring couple, they would remain together for almost a decade. In the spring of 1968, Nora and Barbara moved into a three-story terraced house at 15 Linden Gardens, just off the Chiswick High Road. Situated on a quiet road, and accessed down a set of stone steps to a small white door, it was private, neat, and secure. And although a full-width window only afforded them the view of a small coal bunker under the road and several feet on the pavement above, for only £10 a week, they had a small kitchenette, a bathroom, a sitting room, a toilet out back, and use of a tiny back garden, where Nora was often seen with a trowel, weeding and planting flowers. They were happy in their new home. The tenants were welcoming, the area was good, and with six cats of their own, two adopted strays, and feeling the need to feed any feline which passed by. Although this was the kind of unconventional gay setup that her God-fearing mother refused to approve of, finally Nora had found love, happiness, and contentment. And assuaging the pull of her traditional Irish urges, she also had a loving partner, a nice little home, and a large family of children, all of them cats. 15A Linden Gardens would be their home for the next 3 years. But following the sudden death of Nora's father in May 1968, coupled by frequent bus stops and spiralling mood swings which fractured this once loving relationship, the Christmas of 1970 would mark an end for the Chiswick cat ladies. It wasn't that things were bad, it was just that things weren't as good as they once were. Life plodded on, love became stale, and like so many couples, those first special sparks of sexual attraction had been dampened down to the daily drudgery of predictable routines. It was nobody's fault, except time. They kissed less, they hugged less, and they touched less. Even sitting on the sofa listening to the radio, whereas once they had cuddled, now they sat ends apart, with a wide void between them, filled by cats. Like her smallest kitten, Nora was a homebody, content to stretch out and snooze by a warm fire, with a nice little meal in her belly and kisses on her head, all snuggled up in her slightly threadbare red bathrobe. Whereas Barbara was more akin to the stray Tom that they had adopted, who popped in, said hi, got fed, and headed out to prowl the town, looking for new friends and fun times ahead. So it wasn't surprising when the obvious happened. At a Christmas party held by her employer, 34-year-old accounts clerk Barbara Doyle met 33-year-old secretary Sylvia Long. A lady with the same hobbies, same style, and the same love of music. The only downside being that Sylvia didn't like cats. But that aside, a friendship blossomed into a love affair. And soon enough, Barbara would be spending less nights with Nora in Chiswick, and more nights with Sylvia in Tooting. Being quiet and insular, Nora sensed something was wrong, but said nothing. And as each dreary month passed, the more they argued, the less they talked, and the further they drifted apart. On the 26th of July 1971, needing a break, Nora headed back to Charlesville to soak up the reassuring sights of her hometown, to see her much-missed siblings, and to lay flowers on her beloved father's grave. It was the sanctuary she so badly needed in her moment of crisis. but it was not to be. As a devout Catholic, sickened by her own child's homosexual affair, a bitter row erupted, and choosing God over her little girl's happiness, Nora left, vowing never to return to Ireland or to see her mother ever again. Nora was distraught. Her head was a mess. Her life was falling apart. And having lost her father, her mother, her siblings, the land that she loved, and her faith, all she had left was Barbara and the cats. On the 7th of August, Nora returned home to her basement flat at 15A Linden Gardens. Being told by Barbara that their 8-year relationship was over, that she had met someone else, and that they would be moving into a flat together as soon as possible, a blazing fight ignited as the two ladies' screams wailed across this quiet little street right throughout the night. And the very next day, Nora met Sylvia. It was over. Nora had nothing. Her thoughts were muddy, her emotions were dull, and later described by the prison psychiatrist that she had reacted like a cornered rat. With her life totally destroyed, she suddenly became paradoxically angered in a way which was uncharacteristic for her. Drinking heavily, this usually calm, placid, and thoughtful woman was reduced to a hysterical, impulsive shell. On the morning of Monday the 9th of August, having phoned Barbara and threatened to smash up her prized radio if she didn't return to her, with her bluff called and her prized possession in pieces, Nora watched as the first of Barbara's belongings were loaded into a car and driven away to Sylvia's flat. And just like her life, once it was full of love and happiness, but now it was nothing but an empty void. That night, as she hysterically wept with only her cats for company, unable to imagine any kind of life without her, and heard by Barbara's parting words, describing their time together as 8 years of hell, having knocked back 2 half bottles of gin and rum, with a kitchen knife, Barbara slashed open both of her wrists. Being bloodied and barely conscious, thanks to the compassion and quick thinking of her landlady, Nora survived her suicide attempt. Her wounds were stitched, and being so depressed that she gave up work, even though Nora was prescribed a cocktail of antidepressants, tranquilizers, and something to quell her anxiety, all she did was cry, day and night. As without Barbara, she felt as if she was nothing. Resigned to her fate and a life of loneliness, Nora reluctantly agreed to mutually split from Barbara, on the condition that, as Nora wasn't working, she helped her out with £8.40 a week for the rent, 50 pence a week for the cat's fish, and in 2 weeks' time, Barbara would move out for good. It seemed a logical compromise, only it had one major flaw. Sylvia didn't like cats. Whenever she stayed at the Chiswick flat, she always insisted that Barbara lock them outside whenever she was in. So in their new flat together, these cats were not welcome. Left in Nora's care, being depressed, drugged, and often drunk, unable to look after herself, let alone a family of cats, Nora felt forced to make a very fateful decision and had a vet put all 6 of her cats to sleep. Their deaths hurt Barbara deeply, but feeling like she had destroyed her own babies, it affected Nora worse. like a final stab to the heart, being unable to cope with their loss. With not a single meow or purr in their sparsely furnished flat, and its walls lined with packed bags and boxes. On the evening of Thursday the 26th of August, putting her head in the gas oven, once again, Nora tried to take her own life. Rescued by Marguerite, their elderly landlady, that night, she sat down with both ladies in their sitting room for a chat over a cup of tea. Knowing that through the haze of drink, drugs and depression, Nora was a truly loving person who was level-headed, caring and thoughtful. As all three went to their respective beds, Nora and Barbara had agreed it was time to move on. As a devout Catholic, Nora hadn't committed a single sin until her first confession. She wasn't bad. She was just a big-hearted woman who craved love and the simple things that romance brings, like kisses, cuddles, love letters, and holding hands. But as true love eluded her, she would break so many sins, such as theft, lust, adultery, homosexuality, suicide. And soon, she would commit the ultimate sin. At 7 a.m., on the morning of Friday the 27th of August 1971, Barbara awoke and ran a bath in the first floor bathroom that they shared with the rest of the house. After half an hour, she returned to the basement. She did her makeup and hair. She dressed in a pink dress, a blue cardigan, black shoes, and her favourite rain mac in shocking pink. So by 8 a.m., Barbara Doyle was ready to leave. In contrast to this immaculate lady, who she loved more than life itself, Nora was a mess of bed hair, a gaunt complexion, and red puffy eyes. As although they had agreed to mutually split, dressed in her tatty threadbare red bathrobe, Nora pleaded for her to stay, as tears streamed down her face. Nora's words were fruitless. She knew it. And as her once-forever lover asserted, "Nora, no, I'm leaving you. I've nothing more to say." Both ladies were unaware of how true that statement was, as Barbara would never utter another word. And from the door of the kitchen, as she took a last look at her home for the last 3 years, a place so full of good times and happy memories, as she turned away from the little back garden where their family of cats once played amongst the posies. Suddenly, Nora snapped. Like a cornered rat, acting without thinking, instinctively, she grabbed a garden trowel and smacked Barbara hard over the head with a small iron tool as blood gushed down her pink waterproof mac. In panic, Nora gave chase as Barbara staggered along the passageway towards the front door, pleading for her forgiveness and crying, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry," as the dazed lady stumbled to make her escape. Blinded by the blood in her eyes, as Nora desperately yanked her jilted lover away from the door, they both tumbled into the sitting room, tripped over the rug, and hit the wooden floor hard, as Barbara's head bounced off the cast iron fireplace, and above her right eye, a large gash poured profusely. Grabbing a tea towel to stem the bleeding, as Nora dabbed at the gaping wound, begging, "I'm sorry, don't! I didn't mean to hurt you," and tried to silence her by beseeching, "Don't scream, please, don't." Fearing for her life, as her ex-lover bared down upon her, Barbara's screams only got louder. And before Nora even knew what she was doing, being angry, desperate, and lovesick, having pulled the cord from her tatty red bathrobe and wound it swiftly around Barbara's small pale neck, with both fists gripping it tight until her knuckles were white. Nora cried, "Don't scream! Don't scream!" as Barbara's terrified face turned a dark shade of puce. And as Nora stared into the slowly reddening eyes of the woman who was once her lover, although a few faltering claw marks from her pink fingernails struggled to free her last living breath, before Nora knew it, the relationship was over, and Barbara was dead. Being sat alone and stroking her dead lover's bloody head in the sitting room that they once shared, a short while later, Nora called her sister Helen, who lived nearby, and her young nephew Anthony, who ran to the Chiswick police station just one street over. Officers arrived at 10 a.m. A doctor declared life as extinct. And with the evidence matching Nora's full but emotional confession, the investigation conducted by Detective Chief Inspector Hurley and Detective Inspector Busby was short but thorough. Being full of remorse and confusion, there was no denying that this was a crime of passion, committed while the balance of her mind was disturbed and without any premeditation. The autopsy confirmed that her head injuries were caused by blunt force trauma by a trowel and the fireplace. Her death was due to asphyxiation by strangulation. And with a wealth of evidence, alongside the boxes, the packed bags, the broken bits of radio, the cries, the bloodstains, the six dead cats, and the tatty red bathrobe, which out of habit, Nora had hung up on the back of the bedroom door, she was arrested for the murder of Barbara Doyle. On Tuesday the 7th of September 1971, barely 10 days later, Nora Tanconi, formerly O'Donnell, was tried at the Old Bailey in a short trial which was described as an open and shut case, with the psychiatrist of Holloway Prison concluding that being trapped like a cornered rat, with no prior experience and being unable to cope, Nora had snapped. At her trial, she pleaded not guilty to murder, but guilty of manslaughter by diminished responsibility. And as both the prosecution and defense accepted this plea, Nora was sentenced to 3 years in prison. And after her release, her fate is unknown. All the Chiswick cat lady ever craved was a kiss, a cuddle, and a hug. And for that, she paid the ultimate price. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to Murder Mile. I hope you enjoyed the episode and all of the hard work that goes into it. It may only be 30 minutes long, but many of them take months to research, a week to write and edit, and it literally kills me to finish. But if you also like some pointless gobbledygook where nothing much happens, except I say some words, I drink some tea, we do a quiz, I eat a cake, and then I switch off the recording. If that sounds great, stay tuned. Before that, a big thank you to my new Patreon supporters, who are Kath Mounts and Carl Phillips. I thank all of you for your support. It's very much appreciated. Also a thank you to Anne-Marie Griffin for your very kind donation. I thank you too. And a huge thank you to everyone who continues to listen to the podcast. There's a lot of choice out there, so I'm glad that you're staying with the show. Murder Mile was researched, written and performed by myself, with the main musical themes written and performed by Eric Stein and John Books of Cult With No Name. Thank you for listening, and sleep well.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Oh, dear. Cripes. Oh, that's going to be a bugger. Oh. Hello, everyone. Oh. Welcome to Extra Mile. Oh, dear, that was a nightmare to record. Got up early to try and get stuff done. It's been raining a lot, so it's really noisy and echoing at the moment. And, you know, people walking past, which is fine, I'm used to. And I was racing to get it done because I know that my neighbour normally gets his engine on at about 8 a.m. So I was racing and racing and trying to get it done. And then halfway through the record, you can probably just hear a low hum next to me. He was like revving his engine. I was like, oh no. And then it was like it's a low hum, and it's not really a lot you can do. You just got to... So I'm hoping I'm gonna have to edit around this, and I'm hoping I can get rid of that horrible hum sound in the background. But I don't know. I may need to end up re-recording half of this. But I hope you enjoyed that episode. Something different again. I'm gonna make a cup of tea. As you know, I always try and give you something different every week. So, obviously, last week was the man-made disaster one that we had, the tidal wave. So, next week's is a very different one as well. That's very different. So, each week I deliberately pick something different, something unusual. So, hopefully, you never really know what you're gonna get. It's like a box of chocolates. So that's kind of the idea. I think it's... Hang on, I'm just putting my sugar in. Hang on. Oh, down to the last two sugar. There we go. I think there's nothing worse. I used to listen to a lot more podcasts, and I kind of found that with some of my favourites, it's just the same every week. I had some comedy ones, I had some history ones, and, you know, it's the same every week. And I think that's the problem, is if there's a format, it's familiar for you, so it draws you in. But the problem is, sometimes it can be a bit stale and the same, and especially with true crime as well, people tend to do the same shit every week. It's like, oh, there was a bad man and he does do killings, oh look how bad he is, oh he went crazy, oh it's like, oh it's the same every week, which is why I try and do something different. You know, it's like we had a child killing in a different era, and then next week's is a three-parter, just so you know, which is interesting. I'm looking forward to that one. That one's a really weird one. But yeah, just trying to mix things up a bit, and working out next year as well what that will be. So what else? What have we got to say while the tea is brewing? Well, while the water's doing. I'm all over the shop today. While the water's brewing, right. Just so you know, I know that I posted about this ages ago, I've got a Threadless store where you can buy stuff. I've done all of the Murdermar masks, which is very exciting. So that's online now. So there's a link in the show notes. You can go there. You could buy. Got all these special masks that you can wear to protect you against the nasty virus. And it's got Murdermile on it. And it's got like there's some Reg Christie ones. There's a Blackout Ripper one, which is all exciting. If you would have looked on them recently, I apologise for this. I know I sent everyone to it recently, but what I didn't realise is I thought you, to Threadless, you just upload your image and then it says, do you want it on all these products? And I went, yes. What I didn't realise is you've got to go through every image and you've got to double check everything because most of them were wrong. It was like half an image or a little corner. It's just bollocks. So I've gone through and I've redone most of them. I've junked a lot of stuff as well. So all the masks are up to date. The mugs are pretty good, I think. All the T-shirts are done. So have a look if you want to. There's some interesting stuff on there. Other exciting news. Oh, touch wood. Touch wood, everyone, quick. I'm going to try and reopen Murdermar Walks. So the first one, I think... I could be wrong about this. I've got this down as Sunday the 11th of October at 11 a.m. It could be the 4th, I'm not too sure. I've just written this down as 11th. Actually, I've written 11th, which is... Well, anyway, the first or second Sunday of October, if you go to the website, you can buy tickets on that. What I'm going to do, I'm going to keep it very socially distanced. It's only going to be 10 people. I'm going to ask if everyone can bring a mask with them. That would be great. Hand sanitizer, we're going to keep our distance, and I'm only going to do one a week, so it's going to be very limited. If people have vouchers that they've already booked for Murdermar Walks, welcome to use them. If they expired during the pandemic or whatever was going on, just email me. What I'll do is I'll extend it for another year. I don't have a problem with that, so just let me know. So that's good. So hopefully Murdermar will start up again in a small, safe way. But how long for? Obviously, all the kids go back to school in September, and kids tend to be germ bags. Oh, so I think that if there's going to be a resurgence, it's going to be at the end of September. God help us all. And obviously, we've got Christmas to look forward to as well. Ugh, doom laden. Anyway, quite a few people have been saying about how they don't want to become a regular patron supporter. Patron's very good if you want to support the podcast. You get lots of free stuff. But if you don't want to be a patron supporter, but you do want to kind of financially support the podcast, which many people do, it's not essential. There's a new system that's just been set up called Supporter. There's a link in the show notes. You don't need any PayPal account or anything like that. You just click on the link. It says, how much do you want to support? And money goes towards Murdermile. Yay! And again, oh, and who knows? I'm gonna let my tea brew for a bit. With Supporter, I might be able to afford maybe some proper milk. Who knows? Because I'm still using powdered milk. Anyway, so that's all good. So that's good. So Threadless, you can go to Threadless. You can buy some stuff. I don't make much off Threadless, but then again, I don't do anything with it. They make all the stuff. They deliver it. I just upload the images. So that's good. Murdermar Walks returning start of October, you can make donations to Murdermar via Supporter, which is all very good. So what else we got? Let's do the quiz, then we'll go into some questions. So as always, don't forget, I might edit stuff out of this episode, so the questions may not appear in the episode. I may accidentally bowl them up very shortly when we go through the extra mile bit. Who knows? I'm going to discuss my cake in a bit. Yeah, don't worry, the important bit. Okay, question one. What town did Nora originally come from? Question two. What city did Barbara originate from? Question three. What was the first name of Nora's first husband? Hang on, I've written first, so I've done that wrong. Sorry. What was the full name of Barbara's first husband? Did three names. First name, middle name, surname. Question four. What was Nora's first crime before the murder? Question five. What was Barbara's nickname? Everyone actually called her this. They never really called her Barbara, but I decided to call her Barbara throughout this story just to keep things consistent. Question six. How many siblings did Nora have, and in what order was she born? So, how many brothers and sisters did she have, or how many siblings did she have, and where did she come in that order? Question seven. How much money did Nora ask for from Barbara on a weekly basis to buy fish for the cats? See, all the important questions. Question eight. What colour was Barbara's rain mac? And before you answer that question, what colour was her cardigan? Ooh, exciting questions. Whoa. Impress your friends with your knowledge. Question nine. What was Barbara's new lover called? I'll probably balls up this question next. And question 10. Barbara and her new lover met at a Christmas party of their employer, who had the initials of NSOPA, NSOPA, as I'm calling it. But what does NSOPA stand for? Interesting. Right. Before we get into the next bit, I am going to balls up the next bit. I've just seen what I need to discuss. So I'm going to grab my tea. Stirry. It's a nice Yorkshire tea, not the biscuit version. Biscuit version is very nice, but because I eat a lot of biscuits, it tends to not be great with it. So I tend to have the standard Yorkshire tea, which is a very nice tea. It's got a nice, dark colour to it, and it's got a nice flavour. It's not too bitter. I think I like PG, but sometimes PG can be a bit bitter. And some of the cheaper teas, like the Tesco's one, are just bloody awful. It's like sludge. Ugh, horrible. You've got to have a good tea. Right, okay. Bollocks. Okay. Let's do some extra stuff that wasn't in here. So, this is interesting. If you're listening to this episode on the day it goes out, the date went out is the 49th anniversary of the murder. So, there you go. It wasn't kind of planned that way. It's just kind of turned up the way. I did one episode recently where I did plan it around an anniversary. I can't remember what it was. I think it was episode 100, the one about the Amaritza massacre. Okay, let's see what else we've got. Oh, I don't want to do that question because it gives away too much. So, leading up to the murder. So Sunday, the 6th of August, was the day that Nora met Barbara's new lover, not mentioning her name, because that's one of the questions. Nora and Barbara had been up all night. They'd been arguing all night. The next day, Barbara's new lover turned up. There was a bit of an argument between the three of them in the flat. Nora was saying Judy, which... Oh, I just gave away one of the bloody questions, didn't I? Pretend you didn't hear that. There's two questions that I almost gave away. It's hard to do this. I'm not going to edit this out anyway. She said Barbara always gets attached to people. She was saying this to Barbara's new lover. It always happens after she goes away on holidays. Nora was upset, and she was trying to be the peacemaker, as she always was. But it was there that night that Barbara and her new lover said, look, we're looking for a new flat. If we find one we like, we're going to move in together. But obviously they've been together for about 6-7 months by that point, kind of on and off. As mentioned, the Monday morning after that moment, Nora tried to kill herself. It's what's reckoned on the first time on here. By slitting her wrists, she drank half a bottle of gin and half a bottle of rum. She wasn't much of a drinker, to be honest. She really didn't like alcohol. But she started to drink by that point. She cut her wrists, but then... as often happens, people kind of realise what they've done at that point, or they don't truly want to kill themselves. So she went to her landlady and she said, look, wrists are bleeding. She was drunk. The landlady, Marguerite Perkins, I think I mentioned, drove her to West London Hospital. where she was attended to. It was superficial wounds, so it wasn't too bad. She'd lost some blood, but she wasn't kept in hospital overnight, and therefore a doctor was able to come out and assess her as well. The landlady as well seems like a really nice lady. Like the landlady, she had a car, so she drove down to Fulham to go and get Barbara to bring her back, to bring her to the hospital to say, you know, Nora's tried to kill herself. So the landlady seems like a really sweet lady. Doctor prescribed her. She was on Stemontil, which was an antidepressant, Librium, which is obviously a tranquilizer, and Stematil, which is an anxiety medication. Same anxiety medication as Ronnie Cray. Why do I know that? I don't know. Weird bit here, it kind of says that, you know, if you remember in the story, it says after that moment she called Barbara and she said, come back and stay with me forever, or I'm going to smash up your radio. Her radio was obviously Barbara's favourite thing. She smashes it up, and it's all in pieces. But weirdly, in the police statement later, it says that there was blood found in the room, and some of it was over the radiogram, which was that. So either they had two radiograms, or it wasn't smashed up. It's not really clear. To be honest, there's no crime scene photos. And to be honest, it doesn't really make a difference to the story. It's not like oh, she lied. It was like, you know, there could be two radios. Who knows? So what else we got? Trying not to give up so much information about the death of the cats is kind of an odd one. We have two kind of statements about that. One kind of one side of the statement says that Nora had obviously asked her to pay a little bit of money towards the rent and some money for the fish, of an amount that I'm not going to say because that gives away the question. But that Barbara didn't give her any money and started taunting her, saying, oh, I'm not going to give you any money for this, you can't afford to look after the cats, which doesn't make any sense because we know that Barbara loved the cats as well. Whether Nora put down the cats to kind of, some people have referenced this saying, you know, to kind of antagonize Barbara and kill the cats and say, look, I've killed your cats, in the same way that she smashed up the radio. But do you know, she may have done it out of angst, but both of them seemed really upset about this. This is, you know, this was their beloved cat. So it's the six cats that they owned. Obviously, they didn't kill the cats that they'd kind of, the strays that they'd adopted. They kind of just disappeared off. Boat going past, so there's a bit of noise. Nora, apparently, you know, the house had gone into disarray. She was in disarray. She wasn't able to feed the cats, to really look after them. She couldn't afford to look after the cats anymore, so it is said that they both mutually consented to the destruction of the cats, but in different references it says Nora did it, and then the other one is they both agreed to it. So it's really hard to tell who was right or wrong, but then again, it doesn't really add up much to the story, to be honest. Again, as mentioned, the day before Barbara was due to leave, Nora tried to gas herself in the flat. There's a little they had a little chair, a little kitchenette at the back near the garden. She turned on all the gas, she put her head in the oven, but by this point, obviously this is 1971, the gas board, because a lot of people had started, not a lot of people, you know, there'd been enough people to cause this a problem, that if you put your head in the oven, the carbon monoxide would kill you. So what the gas board had started to do, they'd started to put an amount of, I think it's some kind of sulfur agent in there, so before the carbon monoxide overtakes you and you go unconscious, you'd actually start being sick. So she tried to put her head in the oven to kill herself. It didn't work. She ended up being sick, and it doesn't really say what happened, but it's believed that Marguerite, her landlady, again came down to look after her. Seems like a nice lady. Seemed like she was always there. What else have we got? Day of the murder. Oh, I'll do Nora's statement. So Nora gave quite a few statements. The police were really good with her. Obviously, she was a woman in a lot of distress. They called in a doctor. They gave her a sedative. You know, they sat her down. It was clearly, they weren't going to have to do much work over this one. It was clearly, as mentioned, a crime of passion. She was clearly upset. It wasn't premeditated. They knew that. There was no murder weapons anywhere. It was everything pointed to the fact that this was just an argument that erupted, and then, you know, she just lost her. And all of her statements match up with that. So Nora gave loads of statements, but this is one of them. I'm going to have to change this. Judy and... Oh, I've done it again. Just fucked it up. Barbara and I... Fucking hell. Barbara and I... okay, this is Nora's, one of Nora's statements. Barbara and I have been living together for about 8 years, but today she was going to leave me and live with someone else. She got up and had a bath and was leaving at 8 o'clock. Just before she was leaving, I got up and went out to the kitchen to ask her to stay. That was just before 8 o'clock. She said she wouldn't stay and was leaving anyway. I went to the toilet. This is, I took this bit out of the story because it's, I, you know, trying to explain to you the planogram of what the house looks like, and the fact that, you know, because this is 1970s, they had an outdoor toilet, so they didn't have an indoor toilet. They had a shared bathroom on the first floor, but it didn't have a toilet in it. The toilet was outside in the garden. Not in the garden, but in kind of, you know, a lot of people had an out, I remember those from the 70s, an outdoor kind of toilet. So, but she did. She got upset. She went out to the outside toilet. She came out. She said Barbara was standing in the garden just outside of the kitchen door. I picked up something. That turned out to be a trowel, according to the detectives. When they turned up, they found blood on it. It matched the wounds as well. Only Barbara, Nora didn't seem to know that at the time. She was, you can clearly see in her statement, she's in a bit of a state. I was in a fury and a temper because, again, she said she was leaving me. I can't think what I picked up, but I hit her with it. I think I hit her, on the back of the head because she was walking away at the time, which makes sense. It was at the back of the head and she was heading towards the door. I put the thing down and ran into the front door. I ran after her saying I was sorry. I grabbed her and she fell down and hit her head on the radiogram. She says the radiogram, but in the later statement she says that it was the corner of the fireplace, which it was. She was bleeding from here. She points to the top of her right eye. I got frightened. I picked up a tea towel to stop the bleeding. She got up, but then we both fell over and she hit her head on the fireplace. Judy was screaming all the time. I tried to stop the bleeding, but she pushed me away. I was so scared. I just wanted her to be quiet. I took the cord out of my bathrobe pocket. She says bathrobe pocket, but it was actually around her waist. I believe that later on, when the police found it, she'd actually put the cord back in her pocket. I told her to shut up, but she wouldn't. I put the cord around her neck, and after a few minutes, she stopped screaming. I then realised she was dead, and I would have to go to the police. I took this out of the story because it didn't make sense. I called for Mrs. Bowden, who was the lady on the ground floor, and she called for Nora's sister Helen, who was local, and then the sister turns up, and then the nephew goes to the police station. I changed that in the story because it was just like, she calls Mrs. Bowden, Mrs. Bowden calls her sister tells her nephew to go to the police, and then the police turn. It was just like, you'd be like, what? Who's doing what? So I just made it simpler. Doesn't really change anything anyway. What else we got? What happened? Please go in. Okay. I took out a lot of the witness statements. It's kind of interesting. Do you know, people heard screams between 8, they say between 8:15-ish, 8:15-ish, some say 8:30. So that leaves about half an hour to an hour that pretty much those who did hear the screams didn't do anything. Obviously, Nora goes to Kathleen, who's the ground floor tenant, says to call her sister Helen. Kathleen's worried that Nora's going to try and commit suicide again. She wouldn't, Nora was obviously in a mess. She wouldn't really say what was going on. She wouldn't let Kathleen go down to the flat to see what had happened. She was just like, please just call the police. Please just call my sister. Sister turns up. They call the police. Obviously, the police station is literally one street away, so they don't need to use the phone. They just go straight round. So the sister arrives and the son at 9:45 a.m. goes straight to the police station. So the police arrive literally around 10 o'clock. First person to arrive was temporary detective Simpson. And shortly after that, Dr. Stuart Kahn, who arrived on the scene and pronounced that Barbara was dead. What else is there? Oh, yeah. So, post-mortem was conducted by Dr. Hugh Johnson at the Hammersmith Mortuary. He found signs of strangulation by both hand and ligature. The ligature was the cord from the bathrobe, which had been removed. He declared it as death by asphyxiation due to strangulation. He said there were purple abrasions to the neck, a one-inch cut above the right eye, which is where she fell, a one-inch cut to the right back of her head, which was the trowel. There were no defensive wounds to the arms and legs, no skull fracture, so it wasn't hard enough to kind of knock her out or to fracture her skull. But he said, because it's obviously the blood vessels are close to the top of the skin on the top of the head, so there's a lot of blood loss there, but not enough blood loss to be serious. Barbara's larynx was fractured, her tongue was bruised and pushed forward. A lot of hemorrhaging, obviously, to her skin and eyes, and some claw marks around her neck, which was where she'd been trying to grab the bathrobe cord and to pull it away before she ended up being strangled. All the blood found in the room was type B, which was Barbara's. Detective Constable Withers found the trowel outside. He had found blood on it as well. He also found on it some red fibres. There were red fibres everywhere that are kind of from the bathrobe as well. What else we got? As mentioned, yeah, in the front room was the bloodstained cloth, the tea towel that she'd used to try and stem the blood. Hanging up behind the bedroom door was the bloodstained bathrobe with the bloodstained cord in the pocket. They knew that Nora wasn't trying to hide the bathrobe. It was just, you know, she was in a day state. She did the most normal thing she did. She took off her bathrobe. She put it up behind the door. It's kind of, you know, people go into kind of automated mode. And that was one of her things. And in the bathroom cabinet, they found all of her pills. It was uncertain whether she'd actually taken her pills for that day. Witness statements. Kathleen Bowden was in on the ground floor. Her two sons were there, James and Dennis. Her daughter at the time was on holiday. Between 8:15 and 8:30, they were preparing breakfast and they heard some screams. But they believed that the screams were not coming from downstairs, but coming from next door. Because the next door flat, apparently, the people on the top floor were very quarrelsome, they said. Engine has gone off next door. That's bloody marvellous, isn't it? Bloody marvellous. I might re-record that last bit. They said there was a terrific rumpus of screaming and such like. I'm going to redo it just in case. I hope I can remember where I stopped. What else we got? As mentioned at the start, Marguerite Perkins, the landlady on the top floor, she was there, but she was very deaf. And she'd got a radio on that morning, so she didn't know that anything was happening until about 10:52 a.m. But she said both girls were very charming, very reasonable, and I can see no reason for the incident. And I think that's it. There was an inquest held at Acton Magistrates Court on the 1st of September. That was pretty quick. So a couple of days later, 7th of September, it went straight to trial at the Old Bailey, and that was an open and shut case, as mentioned. Both the prosecution and the defence agreed that it wasn't murder, it was manslaughter by diminished responsibility, and Nora was sentenced to 3 years in prison. I've done a little bit of a search to try and find out more about where she is now. Nothing. She kind of disappears after that. So uncertain. Maybe she was hospitalised after that point. Do you know? Quite a fragile woman. Maybe, do you know, given the fact of what she realised that she'd done, probably quite a horrific thing. She probably hospitalised. So, yeah, maybe she went back to Ireland. Who knows? Maybe she's not using her married name anymore. Maybe it was, I mean, I don't know. Either way, I hope she's had a better life after that. And, I hope she found peace. So, but yeah, no, just 3 years she served in prison for that. So, okay, let's do the quiz questions and then I'll re-record what I've just done. Oh, so annoying. Question number one. Oh, my cake. I forgot to mention, my cake is a vanilla cream crown. Mmm, yummy. It's kind of a round, fluffy pastry with a little bit of icing. And in the centre is kind of like a custardy filling with... These look like... not almonds. Could be almonds? I don't know. Yeah. Oh, I've had one already, so that's going to be nice. Question number one. What town did Nora originally come from? I'm going to have a slow petite. What's nice. The answer was Charlesville in County Cork. Question number two. What city did Barbara originate from? Answer, Wellington in New Zealand. Wellington in New Zealand? Question number three. What was the full name of Barbara's first husband? His full name was René Clive Tenconi. Seems a bit weird, doesn't it? He was Italian, and obviously Tenconi is an Italian name. René, you'd expect to be a French name. Clive? Clive? Question four. What was Nora's first crime before the murder? In May 1955, her aunt René broke into a branch of W.H. Smith's on the North End Road in Fulham to steal a rack of raincoats, hats and shirts worth £100. She was charged with larceny. Question five. What was Barbara's nickname? I gave this away about 1,000 times, so you should have got this. Her middle name was Judith, so her nickname was Judy. Judy, Judy, Judy. There you go. A little bit of a Cary Grant impression there. Question six. How many siblings did Nora have and in what order were they born? She was the seventh of eight siblings. Question seven. How much money did Nora ask for from Barbara on a weekly basis to buy fish for the cats? That was 50p. Question eight. What colour was Barbara's rain mac and what colour was her cardigan? The rain mac, of course, was shocking pink. And the cardigan was pale blue. Question nine. What was Barbara's new lover called? I gave this away 100 times, although I didn't give away her surname. So if you got the surname, well done to you. Her full name was Sylvia Long. And question 10. Barbara and her new lover met at a Christmas party by their employer who had the initials of NSOPA, NSOPA. But what does NSOPA stand for? It was the National Association. It was the National Society of Operative Printers and Assistants. Ooh, sounds exciting. So, anyway, that's that done. I hope you enjoyed that. That was episode 106. We've got episode 107 starting next week. Three-parter, I think. So, hope you enjoy that. I'm off to eat my cake, have some tea, and I'm gonna re-record some of the bits that I couldn't do because... He had his bloody engine on. Anyway, have yourself a good week. Stay safe. Be good. Be happy. Don't get murdered. Otherwise, you'll end up on the podcast. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.